The reading this morning comes from Psalm 12. Help, Lord, for the godly man ceases, for the faithful disappear from among the sons of men. They speak idly, everyone with his neighbor. With flattering lips and a double heart they speak. May the Lord cut off all flattering lips and the tongue that speaks proud things, who have said, with our tongue we will prevail, our lips are our own. Who is Lord over us? For the oppression of the poor, for the sighing of the needy, now I will arise, says the Lord. I will set him in the safety for which he yearns. The words of the Lord are pure words, like silver tried in a furnace of earth, purified seven times. You shall keep them, O Lord, you shall preserve them from this generation forever. The wicked prowl on every side when vileness is exalted among the sons of men. Please be seated.
Good morning. Good to see you all here this morning. We're kind of continuing our study of the Beatitudes or the Sermon on the Mount, and we're looking at the blessed are the pure in heart. And in our reading, the words of the Lord are pure words. So in essence, we know where where pureness would come from. Its originator is God. Matthew chapter 5, verse 8 says, blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. I think everyone here, if you've really truly come to worship God, you want to see God. Not only to see God, but to be with him eternally. The song that we just read, you know, I tell my athletes when they're playing basketball, I say, leave it all out on the floor. I want to see you sweating. I want to see you working really hard. And when you're working really hard, if you need a break, I'll get you out and I'll let you sit on the bench and rest up again. But that's how we should be as Christian people. We should really be working hard. We should leave it all out on the floor, so to speak. And then we will rest. We will rest in that fair and happy land. And I think that's what our desire is. We not only want to see God, but we want to be with God and be with God forever and ever. And not only be with God, but to see his son, to see Jesus, to embrace him and to thank him for all that he did for me. And to see his mighty angels. I don't know about you, but I believe the angels of God still work. In fact, I believe the angels help us in so many ways. They may even help us and prevent us from getting hurt, physically or even spiritually. And I want to thank them. And also, as you all probably do, you're excited to have that wonderful reunion with those that we know are saved. I can't wait to see my parents again. I can't wait to see my sister. I can't wait to see my aunts and my uncles and to have that wonderful reunion and to be with the children that have been lost. Heaven will be full of children. Full of children. And I can't wait. And I think that's why we come together, because we want to draw closer to God. We want to see him. So the main purpose of our worshiping together, obviously, is to give God praise. But we want to know more about him, so that our fellowship is such a bond, not only now that helps us along that pathway, but it's something that we will have forever and ever. And that's why we come together. But this verse, Matthew chapter 5, verse 8, indicates that only the pure in heart will see God. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. So to me, that indicates that only the pure in heart will see God. And I look at that and I think to myself, especially if I review my life and I think how I've not always been very pure, that it's a tremendous spiritually, it's a daunting spiritual task to be pure in heart. And I recognize too that I can't do that on my own. I cannot make myself pure in heart. I can't do it. No matter how good I am, and sometimes I think I'm okay, but no matter how good I am, I cannot make myself pure in heart. I cannot do this on my own. We sing a song, and I know that you'll recognize the song, obviously. Pure in heart, O God. And I want to read some of the lyrics here. Pure in heart, O God, help me to be. May I devote my life wholly to thee. Watch thou my wayward feet. Guide me with counsel sweet. Pure in heart, help me to be. Pure in heart, O God, help me to be. Teach me to do thy will most lovingly. Be thou my friend and guide. Let me with thee abide. Pure in heart, help me to be. Pure in heart, O God, help me to be. Until thy holy face one day I see. Keep me from secret sin. Reign thou my soul within. Pure in heart, help me to be. And if you didn't recognize, I know we know that as a song, but that's a prayer. That's a plea. Please, God, help me to be pure in heart. The writer of this song is a woman named Fanny E. Davidson. And she was born in 1851, and she died in 1887. She didn't live very long. She is expressing her desire to be pure in heart. And I don't know whether you noticed that or not as we read that, because it is a prayer. In my mind, this is a prayer. We sing it, but it's a prayer. It's a plea. I don't know if you recognize that, but she understood just how difficult it is to be pure in heart. She recognizes that we can't do it on our own. And she's asking God, God, make me pure in heart. She says things like, watch thou my wayward feet. And if you've lived any length of time and you look back at her life, and she didn't live very long, but if you've lived any length of time, you recognize just how difficult it is to stay straight, to stay on the path that is straight and narrow. Jesus said that the right way is narrow, but the wrong path, there's just a lot of room. It's broad. And in fact, the wrong path has no boundaries. And most people choose that. He says, stay on the right way. Stay on the narrow path. She says in there, keep me from secret sin. And she's almost writing this for me, because she's saying there could be something in my life that only God and I know about. And not only is it that way, is I'm keeping it a secret. I don't want anybody else to know. It's a secret sin. And she says, keep me from that. I want to be transparent. Can't keep a secret from God. Can't be done. But these are things that are held within. Jesus says, it's not what goes into a man that defiles him. It's not what goes into your mouth that defiles you. It's how you digest it and then whether or not you expel it. Now, there are any number of things that And I know I know you do too. There are any number of things that either we see or that we hear that we can't help but to see and hear. Just can't help it. Some things we hear that we're not expecting. Sometimes we hear things from people we didn't expect to hear it from too. But do we completely expel some of those things that we see and some of those things that we hear? Do we get rid of them completely? Or do we keep them inside and they become like yeast in bread and they grow and they become a secret sin? The writer says, I know it's difficult, it's hard. Fully admits that to be pure in heart is difficult. She uses phrases like this, help me to be, help me. Watch out where I go. Help me to turn from that. Guide me, teach me. Keep me from what we just said, secret sin, but from sin altogether. Reign over me. Now she writes this plea, and she states why she writes this plea, so that we will be sustained until this life is over. Pure in heart, O God, help me to be, until thy holy face one day I see. So to be pure in God, or pure in heart, I should say, is impossible without God's help. It's simply impossible. And if I look back on my own life, I recognize that I might be just like the disciples, and I say to myself sometimes in despair, then how can I be saved? But I also know that Jesus says, for with God nothing will be impossible. So I put my faith and trust in him. So with God in our heart, and we just learned that everything that God says is pure, and God himself is holy. God himself is pure. He is unmixed. And God, if he is the center of our world, even though we are not perfect, God through his Son makes us pure. So what does it mean to be pure? What's that word mean? To me, I think it's important to understand it. It means clean, unstained, unmixed, or sincere. Sincerity, I believe, is purity. It's like what we think of when we go to a wedding and we see the bride, she's dressed in all white. And we look at her and we think she's pure, she's ready to be married. And that's exactly the example that the church is supposed to be like that, a bride, pure. And ready for Christ, the bride of Christ. David said, create in me a clean heart in Psalm 51. So he knew that there were things in his, and if we know anything about David, and we do, he knew there were things in his heart that he could not wash clean, that he could not himself make pure because they had been stained. You ever get ketchup on your shirt? It's impossible to get ketchup out, I think. Your sweater or something. My wife can tell you all about this because she does this quite often. She has a lot. It's when I want to use the washer, because I wash my own clothes. I don't like people washing my clothes. I like to wash my own clothes. That's weird, I know, but I like to do it. I like to hang them up, and I like to put them away. I don't know. That's a weird habit of mine, maybe, because most men probably let their wives wash their clothes, but I don't like that. I like to do that myself. But every time I get ready to use the washer, there's always three or four shirts on there being soaked with whatever it is you soak them with to get the stains out. Anybody else have that problem? And I've said for years, why don't we just get a bib? You know, I don't mind. I could wear one too. It wouldn't bother me. I'll wear one. You wear one. Probably save a lot of our clothes if we did that. But things get stained. They're not the same anymore, are they? And that's what David said about his heart. It's stained. It's not the same anymore. It's not pure anymore. Please, please, Father, create in me a clean heart. And only God can wash the heart of man clean. And I hope I can make sense out of some of these things that I've written here. They make sense to me, but sometimes, and I'm sure you feel this way too, it makes no sense. What are you saying? Well, I'm going to try to make sense out of these things that I say. I don't believe if one is without God, if you don't have God in your heart, I don't believe that we could consider man's heart as a mixture. Because something that is pure and something that is impure cannot be mixed together. It is either one or the other. Even a half-truth makes the entirety of a heart a lie, in my opinion. I watch a lot of shows that, like Forensic Files is one of my favorite shows, and a lot of detective shows, and these people are so good because they can tell it, whether it's a witness or whether it's a suspect, they can tell when they're telling part of the truth and a lot of lies. And some of their lies are really, to me, if I hear them, I think, well, that sounds reasonable. But they have gotten so good that they can tell whether they're telling part truth in a lie. And then when they understand that and they recognize that, that means that everything they say is suspect. Everything they say is suspect. It's like trying to be perfect on Sunday morning while we're in church and trying to be godly, and then after we leave, being ungodly. You can't be pure and impure. But that's kind of the way we look at that, and that it makes everything suspect. All lies come from the father of lies, the devil himself. He is the father of lies. And one has to be able to distinguish the truth from the lies, because mixed together, a lot of times they sound really good. They sound really truthful. And a lot of people are deceived by that, because sometimes people will be deceived by someone that sounds really religious and knows what they're talking about. But in fact, some of what they say is half-truth and half-lie. Half-truths, I believe, in that circumstance are more deceitful than all outlying. And they're more harmful. So even the best person we know who does not obey God cannot be pure without him. 2 Corinthians chapter 11, starting with verse 12. But what I do, I will also continue to do, that I may cut off the opportunity for those who desire an opportunity to be regarded just as we are in the things which they boast. So they want to be like the apostles. For such are false apostles, deceitful workers, transforming themselves into apostles of Christ. And no wonder, for Satan himself transforms himself into an angel of light. Therefore, it is no great thing if his ministers also transform themselves into ministers of righteousness, whose end will be according to their works. We have to be good stewards of the truth so that we can rightly discard what is false. Purity is why God demanded the Israelites to abstain themselves from foreign wives. Now, though these women were purely female, and it seems like we have trouble with that today, really understanding what that means, but these women were purely female, they were wrong for the pure race in which God wanted Jesus to come from. So, a lesson in purity we need to consider: not all that is pure is good for us. Is anybody in here like me, likes coffee? You know, sometimes, I hate to admit this, but sometimes even when I go to bed at night, I kind of look forward to that first cup of coffee. I don't know why that is. I'm anxious for it, kind of. Man, I can't wait to wake up in the morning, sit, try to get up before everybody does, and drink my coffee in peace and quiet. Pure coffee, pure caffeine. I want to talk about pure caffeine. I'm a coffee drinker. Coffee is what I start my day with. A lot of people get up and they have to eat breakfast. I got to be up a while before I can eat breakfast, but I don't want to be up very long before I got my coffee going. In fact, that's the first thing I do after I put my clothes on, is I start my day with a cup of coffee. Now, one of the main ingredients in coffee, or what it is caffeine. And you can get caffeine in other things, tea and pop and so forth. But caffeine that is in coffee, in moderation, this has been up and down, back and forth. And sometimes it's good for you, sometimes it's not. Sometimes one cup is good. Sometimes you can have two or three or four and it's okay. Right now, it's believed that four cups of coffee is not really that harmful for you. And I'm glad of that. I'm really glad of that. But it's thought to have a number of positive effects for the central nervous system. And I'm not a nervous person by nature, but that's a nice thing. It stimulates the nervous system, and it produces, which is really good for me, improved alertness. Because when I get up, I'm not too alert. I don't know about you, but I'm just not too alert. But it improves alertnessness and sharper cognitive function, so I can think clearer, which that's really a good thing for me. And it produces a number of antioxidants that are thought to reduce inflammation and prevent chronic diseases. Well, that does not work for me, because I have what appears to be chronic problems with gout. And I don't know if you've ever had gout before, but I seem to get it quite frequently anymore. In fact, I'm just kind of getting over it again. So I don't know, maybe I need to drink more coffee if that's the case. But too much caffeine, and Mitch can tell you about this, can cause insomnia, jitters, anxiety, rapid heartbeat, and dependence. Well, I think I got that now. The caffeine in coffee, where does coffee primarily come from? How do they get coffee, make it? Beans, coffee beans mostly. But it's interesting to know that there's more ingredients in coffee than I ever realized. It's not just coffee beans. Coffee is a complex mixture of vitamins and minerals that are stimulants. In fact, there are over 60 natural sources that make up coffee. And I don't know, after I tell you a little bit more about this, you may not, it's not going to stop me, but it may stop you from drinking coffee anymore. I don't know. Coffee has what's called plant abstracts that come from plants. And how are they pull this out of these plants, I don't know. But they are natural insect repellents. And that's something to think about when you want to get another cup of coffee. Maybe that's why after I've had my cup of coffee, people stay farther away, because I got toxic coffee bad breath, or coffee breath. But though coffee contains caffeine, it does produce many positive things. I know it does for me. But pure caffeine is toxic. And I remember learning this many years ago in a psychology class, because they were talking about the effects of just not necessarily illicit drugs, but just natural things that we have that we consume daily. And they were talking about this, but they were talking about pure caffeine. And it's typically found in powder form, but It can cause some severe health risks if you have pure caffeine. In fact, you can't handle pure caffeine. 1 teaspoon of pure caffeine makes up the amount of amount that you would find in 28 cups of coffee. 1 teaspoon. Pure caffeine can cause heart failure, seizures, or even death. So the knowledge we have about things that are pure or in their purest form are meant to keep us safe. And I believe the knowledge of that we have about things that are pure are meant not only to keep our bodies safe, but to keep our souls intact. And I think that's really important. Because the world we live in, for example, it's a beautiful place. I don't know about you, but I follow a lot of people on Facebook that do photography. And man, they capture some of the most beautiful things that you'll see in our earth. Some are animals, some are in the sky, some are in the ocean. But they just have this knack of capturing something that's just so beautiful. When God created the earth and all that was in the earth, he said, "This is good." And when he created man, the same thing, "This is good." And we may get the wrong impression and think, well, that means that man was created where he's morally good. Well, he was supposed to be. He was meant to be. But God gave us free will. And therefore, it was up to man to keep himself pure, to keep himself moral. But men tried to mix their own wisdom into God's wisdom. And even what God created that he said was good, men corrupted. And God destroyed most men. Like caffeine, there's a lot of good in the world if we view it and use it correctly. But notwithstanding, underneath there lies a darkness that is pure evil. Listen to what Jesus said when he was praying for his disciples. John chapter 17. "I pray for them. I do not pray for the world, but for those whom you have given me. For they are yours, and all mine are yours, and yours are mine, and I am glorified in them. Now I am no longer in the world, but these are in the world. I come to you, Holy Father, keep through your name those whom you have given me, that they may be one as we are. While I was with them, in the world, I kept them in your name. Those whom you gave me, I have kept, and none of them is lost except the son of perdition, that the scripture might be fulfilled." And when he says that none of them are lost, he means that they are saved. And I am convinced that Jesus knew that his disciples, his apostles, would be saved. I believe that he knew that they would live their lives according to him and try to be pure. He made these statements before he was crucified. He made these statements before Peter denied him 3 times. He made these statements before Thomas doubted. But he knew what we couldn't know. Verse 13, he says, "But now I come to you, and these things I speak in the world, that they may have my joy fulfilled in themselves. I have given them your word, and the world has hated them because they are not of the world, just as I am not of the world. I do not pray that you should take them out of the world, but that you should keep them from the evil one. They are not of the world, just as I am not of the world. Sanctify them by your truth. Your word is truth." In other words, your word is pure. "As you sent me into the world, I also have sent them into the world. And for their sakes, I sanctify myself, that they may also be sanctified by the truth." He says, keep them from the evil one. The evil one is pure evil. Jesus is pure righteousness. Pure evil kills, but pure righteousness is life. I think Jesus is praying that the disciples will maintain their purity because the world is evil, and they're going to encounter a lot of evil. In fact, their end will be because the world hated them. And I'm going to skip some things here. We assemble together today, and we're surrounded by people that have the same interests of worship. And we're not perfect. We are not perfect, but we have faith. When we are out of here, we're out of this assembly, and we were in the world. We are not to be part of the world, because if we become part of the world, then what is supposed to be pure becomes impure. And I believe the entirety of what is supposed to be pure becomes impure. Too much of the world has a negative spiritual effect on us if we're not careful. We become desensitized, and that harms our spiritual purity. The nations around them, the Israelites, the nations around them caused them to become spiritually desensitized. And what was really pure evil appealed to them. Paul says, I beseech you, therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice, wholly acceptable to God, which is your reasonable service. And do not be conformed to the world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. Do not allow yourselves to become impure. And the only way we're made pure is by the blood of Christ. And I'll finish by reading just a few things here. 1 Peter chapter 1 says, and if you call on the Father who without partiality judges according to each one's work, conduct yourselves throughout the time of your stay here in fear, knowing that you were not redeemed with corruptible things like silver or gold, from your aimless conduct received by the tradition of your fathers, but with the precious blood of Christ, as of a lamb without blemish and without spot, something that is absolutely pure, and that's the blood of Christ. He indeed was foreordained before the foundation of the world, but was manifest in these last times for you, who through him believe in God, who raised him from the dead and gave him glory, so that your faith and hope are in God. Since you have purified your souls in obeying the truth through the Spirit, in sincere love of the brethren, love one another fervently with a pure heart. Having been born again, not of corruptible seed, but incorruptible, through the word of God which lives and abides forever, because all flesh is grass, and all the glory of man is the flower of the grass. The grass withers, and its flower falls away. But the word of the Lord endures forever. Now this is the word which by the gospel was preached to you. Unlike the toxicity of pure caffeine, the word of God is purifying. And we mix anything of our own wisdom in with it, we make it toxic. First John chapter 3. Behold, what manner of love the Father has bestowed on us, that we should be called children of God. Therefore, the world does not know us, because it did not know him. Beloved, now we are children of God, and it has not yet been revealed what we shall be. But we know that when he is revealed, we shall be like him, for we shall see him as he is. And everyone who has this hope in him purifies himself just as he is pure. We will see him as he is if we are pure in heart. So the question this morning is, have you made preparation to see God? You know, it's interesting. There's a difference between seeing God and being judged by God. Have you been baptized in the blood of the Lamb that makes you pure? If you have not done that, we ask you to consider doing that today. Well, many of us have been baptized into Christ, but as life goes and it proceeds before us and it goes quickly and fast and challenges arise and adversity comes across our face, a lot of times things happen and they weigh heavy on our hearts. And we have difficulties bearing those things alone, by ourselves. And we don't need to. That's what's so critically important about being a Christian, is you don't need to bear things on your own. God has given us the church through his son Jesus Christ so that we can be in unity and unified. And then when there's distress, we can help each other. So if you need help or you need prayer, please let us know while we stand and while we sing this song.